to Live from IPY with Maggie and Robin and the Best Expedition. They're somewhere out in the Bering Sea, and hopefully we'll hear about where they are in just a moment. I'm going to go quickly again one more time through roll call. And if you're a teacher, can you tell me where, everybody tell me where you're from and how many students, if you have any students with you. Jason Heaton.
Okay, we are in our bell will ring at 10:43. We right now have the Green Honu 7th grade life science. We're on Maui, Makawa, Maui, Kalama Intermediate School. And we would just, before the bell rings, love to hear from Mrs. Prevena something.
Can I go through the roll call?
Hi, Mrs. Prevena.
Yay. Okay. Real quickly, we'll get to you guys in a second here. Mark McCaffrey, have you joined us? Megan? Sam Barlow? Has the St. Paul School joined us? Regina? South, have you joined us? Louise Fisher, will you say who you are and if you have any students with you?
I'm the Director of Finance for Merrill Public Schools in Merrill, Wisconsin. I don't have any students with me, but I'm Kristen Fisher's mother.
Ah, okay. Jackie Gredmeyer?
Yes, this is Jackie. Lee Cooper's here, too.
Hi.
And would you like to say who you are so they know?
We're at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, and we're going out on Healy next month.
Okay. Robert Harris?
Yes.
Say who you are.
I'm a high school teacher from Vermont, and I was with Kathy Geiger out on a SEGNA project, a nice camp that was northeast of Prudhoe Bay.
Okay, and Kathy Geiger?
Here, and I'm one of the PIs of the SEGNA ice camp project, and I just also got back with Robin.
Montgomery Sweet, are you there yet? Robert South?
Yes.
Okay, we're introducing everybody. Say who you are.
Robert Stout.
And Robin's dad?
Yes, I'm Rob. I am Robin's dad.
Okay. Okay, and John from NOAA.
John Kernlund with NOAA Climate Program Office.
Okay, did I forget anybody other than the Healy crew? Okay, go ahead, Healy. Why don't you introduce who you are so that we know who's on the phone with you.
This is Emily Davenport. I'm a graduate student on the boat. This is Robin South. I'm the Earth Life Sciences Coordinator at the Minnetonka Museum, and I'm also on the Healy.
I'm Maggie Prevenis, and I'm from, I'm on the Healy, and I'm from Hawaii.
Hello, I am Ravi Dideva, and I come from the University of Washington in Seattle. I'm an ornithologist and an oceanographer.
My name is Stephen Elliott. I'm the Marine Science Officer on the Healy.
Okay. Is there anybody else with you?
No.
Okay. Great. Real quickly, we wanted to, for the rest of you, we want you to know what Polar Trek is. And Polar Trek is an experience where K-12 teachers are matched with researchers to go out on these field expeditions, either in the Arctic or Antarctic. We're running this program for 3 years to celebrate the International Polar Year. So Robin and Maggie, the teachers that we're going to be talking with, and Emily, Robin and Maggie are Polar Trek teachers that have been matched with the Best Expedition. So just to give you an idea of who they are and how they are connected with Polar Trek. Let's just get right to it. I want to turn this over to Maggie and the group on the Healy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you're out there at sea and where you are?
Well, we're out at sea because we have a large boatload of scientists who are studying all about changes in the Bering Sea ecosystem due
to climatic changes. And where are we? We are at 61 degrees, 33 minutes north, and 173 degrees and 42 minutes west. And the air temperature is 10 degrees, and the water temperature is 29 degrees.
That's in Fahrenheit. Oh, and 30 knots later.
Okay. And you guys can just carry on. Do you want to talk about what you've been doing the last couple of days? We have a map of all the locations of the Healy.
All right. Well, we started our stations. We're about a third of the way. We're right now actually at station number 62. Pretty much at every station, we drop a CTD in order to get basic chemical parameters of the water temperature, salinity, as well as collections of water that almost all the scientists then use. So the CTD is the heart of the entire expedition. Without water, most of the scientists can't do anything. So we do that. We also do plankton toes. We do core sampling for the mud sediments. And we also do sampling for iron. And we incubate some of the water to find out how much productivity and the rate of productivity that the plankton are doing. Right now, that's a real struggle because everything is freezing on board the ship outside. Trying to keep the conditions the same. It's basically really hard. They've been ice picking their incubators and struggling with that. We're also struggling with getting the CTD down now because we're in a lot of ice. So we have to maneuver the ship and make room for us to be able to drop for our sampling.
Oh, we also have some marine mammals. Specialists on board. We have the ice seal team from the National Marine Mammal Laboratory, and we have Carlton Ray, who is a very known and quite an eminent scientist with wolf.
And he's from the University of Virginia, and we also are lucky enough to have his wife on board as well, Jerry McCormick Ray, who has been playing with the mud to find out what is actually living in the sediment that we bring up. And I'm going to let Emily tell you a little about more about the mud. That's her project that she's doing with David Shull.
We're taking mud cores. We've been having a little bit of trouble right now because the sediment isn't that great. It doesn't stay in the core tube. But we're pretty much looking at what kind of nutrients are. We're doing what's called flux cores, where you put a core in and you stir it, look at how much nutrients come out. We're also sectioning the core to get the nutrients that are in the pore water inside the sediment. And we're also studying radon, which is a gas, and it fluxes out of the sediment. We're studying the radon in the sediment as well.
Oh, and David, of course, is looking at all the birds. So you can tell us a little bit about some of the ones that he's seen so far.
Yeah, it's been very interesting because we've gone through many different types of ice, and we have seen a progression of species from more temperate subarctic species to more polar species. We saw some ivory gulls, which are really rare, high-latitude gulls that the folklore is that they will come and eat the poo of the seals and the walruses, so all the ornithologists were very thrilled about that. And we are looking forward to seeing some auklets, plankton feeding birds. Perhaps later on as the season progresses and the phytoplankton leads to more zooplankton in the water.
Okay. Would you guys like to explain a little bit about what it's like to live on the ship?
Why, sure we would.
Yes.
And we have a slide up right now of the captain. We haven't mentioned about much about Ted there, but would you like to mention and introduce Ted?
Oh, the captain Lindstrom. He runs the ship.
nothing can happen. Even our call today couldn't happen without first asking his permission. And we worked with Mr. Elliott, who was a marine scientist here. He is sort of, as far as the Coast Guard, he's the top of the line. The next step that we go, once you're past the scientist, because he's our in-between guy, as well as our principal investigator, our chief scientist, which is Ray Sembrato. So they work closely together in deciding whether or not. Like, for instance, we had earlier this week we had PLOP, and as well as an ice op, which means basically we put a few of the mammal guys down on ice and we watched them try to tag a seal, but they were unsuccessful, and all we got to see was the baby seal that was left on ice. And then yesterday we also dropped some guys down onto ice with using a man basket, and they did some core sampling. So we've done those and all that. It was approved by the captain. He oversees it all. And that's pretty much. We see him most often up at the bridge, and he has a special chair if no one is supposed to sit on it.
And he has special binoculars, too, and we aren't supposed to see him. Is both a Coast Guard vessel and a research vessel. And so because it is, many of the Coast Guard that are on board are also researchers themselves, and they help us take the samples. Like, they run the Rosette. They dump the CTD in the water for us with their winch. That's all them. So, we couldn't do what we're doing without them.
And there's approximately 6 marine science technicians, and then Mr. Elliott is the head of all of them. So he makes sure that we've got them where we need them when we want to lower anything, either from the side or from aft with the back. He works very closely with all that, and they are troubleshooters. When, say, we're having trouble, all of a sudden now the CTD is freezing up and we can't get the water because the bottles have frozen as well, so we've had to make a hot room. So the area where the CTD gets lowered into now is sort of like a little garage, and it's very hot in there.
Excuse me, Robin, would you guys explain what a CTD is and what it does?
Sure. CTD is... can we look at picture 5?
Yes, we're there.
All right. CTD stands for conductivity, temperature, and depth. And basically the conductivity, since there are ions in the salt water, we basically figure out the salinity looking at the because we all know that salt is a conductor of electricity. And so that way we can figure out the salinity that way. We figure out depth. We also do temperature. And also with our rosette, we have a light sensor, 2 different types. There's a PAR, which stands for photosynthetic active radiation, and that only works, of course, during the daylight hours, so it shows how much light is coming in and bouncing off. And then there's also a fluorometer, which basically lets us know how much chlorophyll is in the water. And so that helps us sort of judge how much plankton, and there's also a transmitter. Yes, and that one shows how much sediment and just particles and stuff that are in the water. So those are all, and then there are nitrogen bottles all the way around that entire rosette in a circle. We have 24 bottles, and those are triggered at various depths. Right now, in the area where we're at, it's mostly around 70 to 75 meters in depth, so we drop the CTD all the way down to there, and once it reaches the bottom, we let it sit there for a little bit, and then we begin to raise it up, and somebody then works out of inside looking down, and then they fire a button. They press a button, and it closes however many bottles we want at that certain depth. That's pretty much what a CTD is.
Okay, thanks. Hey, we have a question from John. Don, go ahead, ask your question.
I didn't have a question, I had a statement, which I'm trying desperately to type in here, but I'm having trouble with it, sending it to everyone. We've got a terrific brand new CD, DVD set that I'd like to offer everybody that's on the call, if they simply email me at john.kermond@noaa.gov. It's especially for teachers.
Okay, thanks, John. We'll put that also along with the archive, and we'll type it up right now on the screen.
Thanks.
So everybody gets it.
Yep.
You guys were going to be talking about life on board and what it was like to be on the Healy. Maggie, Robin, are you there?
Yeah.
No, I remember rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. Don't forget that the icebreaker, that the Healy part of the Homeland Security and the search and rescue in this part of the world, and that everyone on board has to follow a schedule, and we kind of fit within that schedule and work around what the Coast Guard is doing. The plan of the day is decided upon by the administration of the ship and our lead scientist, Dr. Ray Sembrano. Every night they get together and they hammer it out and decide what's going to happen. And then they get together and publish it. And then what's on that plan of the day, that's what happens.
Unless, for instance, like today, the wind is extremely strong, and so the helicopter surveys are scheduled for today. But usually everything that's on there will happen.
And Dr. Sembrano holds this really kind of very difficult job of trying to coordinate the investigations of the research scientists on board with the Coast Guard. And these chiefs all get together and they communicate. And not only is he the communicator, he also is doing his own research. And his research is based on incubating the phytoplankton and seeing how many of them grow due to the nutrients in the water. So that's more or less, you understand, we have the Coast Guard and we have the scientists. And then Ray kind of speaks for the scientists and the captain and the administration of the Coast Guard. They kind of all speak with Ray, and then we talk to Ray, and then that's how it goes. Kind of.
And how about, where do you sleep? What do you eat? What's the
great
shower?
I'm on port side.
No, I'm on port.
All right. Harvard, yeah. And my roommate is actually one of the other scientists, and I don't get to see her very often because here on the ship, there are some that work, they work a 12 shift, so from 12 noon to 12 midnight, and from midnight to 12 noon. And Nancy is on the midnight to noon. So when I'm sleeping, she's up working, and then when I'm up working, she's sleepy. So I try to make sure I have everything I need for the day when I wake up about 7. So that way then when she comes in, I can see her usually at breakfast and maybe lunch, and then she's out.
As it's part of my computer, does that area.
I was impressed about how big the area was. I thought it'd be really small, but it's a nice area. There's two of us in a room and two on the other side, and then we share a shower and a toilet in between. So it's very much like a college dorm setup.
And the scientists don't just work 12 hours. You know, they're here on the ship for a limited period of time, so they got to vacate when the sun shines, you know? So they often stay up for over 24 hours at a block, and, you know, you see them falling asleep all over the place because they're tired because they've been up for, you know, 36 hours taking samples and analyzing.
A lot of our stations are really unpredictable because we'll try, especially for our group, because we'll try and core at a station and we bring up the core and there's not a lot of sediment, or the other day one of our core tubes broke. So we just pretty much have to stay up until we can reach our next station, take a core, hopefully it's good, and then we have to process all of it before we go to bed. And lately it seems that the cores are coming around midnight with 2 in the morning, so
And some of us have already been up since 6 or 7 the previous day. So it's a tough shift, but and the foreign people aren't always on a 12-hour shift. We're more on like a 16 to 20 or 24-hour shift. So.
For the birds and mammals, we observe whenever the ship is traveling and there's light. So, you know, our days are also longer than just 12 hours, and we're really grateful there are no bats out here in the Bering Sea that we would have to also survey at least.
Okay. You guys, I'd like to turn it over to the Maggie's school and see if they have any questions. And before I go, though, I know Robin, your mom and dad say hi.
All right. Thank you. Hey, mom. Hey, dad.
Go ahead, Mrs. G. Do you, any of your students have questions?
Okay, yeah, they have lots of questions. We are in a new period. These are now the pink pu'a'as.
I can hit record.
And
I think we're waiting for Mrs. G's students here.
Well, first we were wondering, they can't decide what kind of question to ask. Can you hear us still? Somehow it went so quiet.
Yes, we can hear you. We're waiting. And when they come up to the phone, have them say their name so Maggie knows who she's talking to.
Who has a question? Maggie, you can talk to
her. Hello?
Yes?
Hello? Hello?
Where are you guys?
This is the Kansas Museum of Discovery calling in.
Okay. Oh, yes. Do you have students with you, too?
We do. We have our kind group. We have, this is Laura Seaman, and we have Robin Ramsey's group, which is our young kids for our after-school program. We have our middle schoolers. We will also be having our high schoolers in here, too.
Okay, great. Let me see where Mrs. G is with questions, and if your students have questions, we'll go to them, too.
Okay, is Robin on the phone too?
Yes, Robin's on. You want to say hi, Robin?
Yes, actually, Rusty Sweet is here as well. So you just want to let her know.
Hello.
Hi, Robin. So we will have some questions from us too.
Okay, Mrs. G, do you have any students with questions? Otherwise, I'll turn it over to the museum.
Oh, no, I have them lined up here now, so hold on. This is the first student.
Hi, this is Ruchi.
Hello?
Go ahead, Ricky.
Hello.
Hi, did you guys see any whales eating?
Huh?
Did I see any whales eating?
Have we seen any whales?
Eating.
Eating.
Yeah,
no.
Eating.
No, because it's icy, icy. Everywhere you see is ice, ice. The first day and the second day that we were out, we saw some humpbacks hightailing it in the opposite direction, and then we saw two minke whales hightailing it. But we haven't seen any since because it's just solid ice, and they can't live and eat under the ice. They need an opening so that they can breathe. Remember, they're mammals. Bummer.
Okay, next one.
I think all the students are interested in are the whales because they just leave Maui here.
Yeah.
Also wanted to know if you saw any walruses.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it, but I got to have Robin talk because she was one of the first ones to see a walrus. Take it away, Robin.
Yes, I was up on the bridge and doing an ice observation, which is one of the jobs that Maggie and I have taken on. Because it's very important to keep track of what kind of ice we're going through. So we were recording it for the entire rest of the cruise, and we do that every 2 hours. So I was up there doing the ice observation, and at the front of the ship was a walrus, and it only had one tusk, and we actually had to change the position of the ship so the walrus was doing a chicken. It's like, I'm going to take you on. So he didn't get out of the water until we just started moving to the left of him, and then he dropped back in. So yes, so I've seen one that's really close to the ship, And then the SEAL guys, when they were out in the helicopter, they got some shots of about 14. So we have seen walrus.
Yeah, there were actually three off the bow of the ship about 3 hours ago, swimming around in the water.
Oh, Elliot's seen some too then.
Yeah, we're getting into walrus territory. That's what Carlton, our walrus researcher, said. So we're very excited.
Okay. Mrs. C, any more from your students before I ask the museum?
Yes. This is Elijah.
Elijah! Elijah!
Can I ask my question?
Yeah.
Is the people over there nice?
Oh! Yeah! Elijah, are you sweet thing, you? Yes, they are. They're very nice, and the Coast Guard is extremely helpful and kind to me. So, yeah, they are. That was a very nice question.
Okay, we're going to check out now because we have to go on with class. Things are falling apart here. So say bye. Okay. It's really hard to hear on the speakerphone, and you can imagine that the rest of the kids are just going wild. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
We're checking out. Bye.
Okay.
Aloha.
Okay.
Aloha.
We do have some questions from the museum that Robin works at. Would you like to go ahead?
Yes, here they are.
Okay.
Here.
This is Katie and...
We can barely hear you, whoever was just introducing themselves.
It's Katie and Davina. Have you seen any killer whales?
Any killer whales? Is that what you're asking?
Yes!
No, we haven't seen any of them, but it's possible before we got into the ice that killer whales do make their way up around here. So they tend to hang out basically around the Gulf of Alaska and around Washington.
We saw some last year when we were here a little bit later. They were working the side of the ice in areas where there were a lot of seals on the ice. And the marine mammal experts told us they were the transient kind of killer whale that eats mammals. So those seals better watch out because they're going to come up here again this year for sure.
We have some more questions for you as well.
Okay, go ahead.
It'll be just a moment.
Okay.
This is...
Kaylin. Have you seen any polar bears yet?
No, we haven't seen any polar bears yet. But every time we put people down on the ice, we still have to have somebody there to watch to be on polar bear watch. So we do take a precaution.
How cold is it?
It is about 10 degrees Fahrenheit, and the water is 29 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wind chill, negative 35.
And the wind chill is negative 35. And I experienced that this morning when I was trying to do my ice observation and almost got thrown out off the bridge.
Robin, we have some pictures of bunny boots and Mustang suits. Do you want to talk about why you're wearing them and how they relate to the cold and safety?
The bunny boots are especially designed for cold weather. I know my kind kids saw them. They're those huge white boots. They are waterproof and they keep the air locked in once we have them laced up. And you can inflate them. The Mustang suits are worn by anybody that is doing any work out on the ship. So I've had to put them on when I've helped Emily. So the good thing orange is my color. like, you know, match it up with black. So we wear those. There's also a next level up suits, which are the
MSD 900, which are dry suits. They're insulated dry suits that also have integrated flotation like a Mustang suit. So basically, instead of just being sort of like a comfortable suit like a Mustang is, because it just kind of fits over you, it has very tight seals on your arms and around your neck, and then it has little booties that are attached to the feet. And then it has a heavy-duty zipper that you zip into it. So if you're not careful, you can get really hot. Luckily, it's really cold outside, so you don't really get all that hot.
Robin.
Yes.
This is Heather.
Oh, hey, Heather.
Are you going to read your journal? Because we all wrote you.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be sure to read it.
Okay.
And I still haven't had a chance to put your guys' cuffs down yet with the CCD. I'm waiting to where we're going to be over the actual shelf. Because then I'll be dropping down to almost 1,000 meters. So then we'll get really squishy results. So I want you guys to do the maximum crunch.
Are there more questions from the museum?
Yes.
Wow.
Robin. This is Toby.
Yes.
This is Toby.
Oh, hey, Toby. Hey, Toby.
Are you having fun without us down there?
I guess so. I miss you guys. And, but just to give you guys some trivia also, I'm actually 6,200 kilometers away from you guys. And we're having an okay time. Fun. I've been learning a lot, so I'll have time to tell you guys when I get back.
All right, Robin, we have another question from a young girl.
My name is Haley.
Hey, Haley.
Have you seen seals?
Yes, we have definitely seen lots of seals. We've seen lots of baby seals. Because they have to stay above on the ice because they don't have enough blubber to go into that really cold water. So we've seen, probably at least a dozen, I would think, probably. There was one stretch where we were looking and they were everywhere. We're like, there's one, there's one, there's one. And we had, at that point, the ship had to really think about where they all were. And it's all about seal avoidance. We don't want to run over the seals with the ship. So they do take that into precaution. We've seen spotted seals, the most that we've seen so far. A couple rings, bearded, and in fact, the first seal that we ever saw was a fur seal.
Pardon?
Okay.
Yes.
This is Justin.
We can hear you.
This is Justin.
Hey, Justin.
Wow. Have you seen any penguins?
I told you guys the penguins live in the South Pole. There are no penguins in the North Pole.
Polar bears would eat them.
And Australia says the polar bear would eat them all.
You know, there are other birds called murres, and they're really good at diving down to 60 meters, 180 feet. But they can't fly. So we have things that look a little bit like penguins. They live similarly, but no penguins up here.
Oh.
And who's in the picture?
That was David, the guy that was just talking, the researcher.
Oh, what are we talking about?
We have another question.
What picture are we looking at right now?
The birds.
We have a picture of birds right now and David. But there's another question from the museum right now. Go ahead.
Samantha, Virginia.
This is Samantha in Virginia.
Okay.
What do you like the best about it, about Alaska?
I like the best about it. I think the best thing I've liked so far has been helping Emily cut through the mud. I think it took me three different times to finally get the camp back to go. Because every time we get suited up, it takes a while to put on all the gear, the Mustang suit, and get all hyped up, and then we wait for the core to come up, and then there would be nothing good. And so then we'd have to wait several hours later, and then one time we were all suited up, and we spotted the seals, and so they had to stop everything, and all the seal guys went out to try to tag the seals. But I really enjoyed getting the chance to actually work with the scientists and really, you know, get dirty and wet, because with the mud, there's all the water, too, which Emily is pretty sure she's got me wet as we push the course through.
That's just my goal. That's my goal. I'm trying to get this wet.
I don't
think so. You have to be initiated. That's right.
Robin, this is Kara coming up. Oh, sorry. Oh, Kara's turn.
Hi, Robin.
Hey.
Have you got the cook up there yet? And have you done your happy food dance?
What?
Her happy food
dance. Did you get the question, Robin?
No, I didn't.
Have you got the cook while you're up there yet?
Okay. Have you been able to cook yet, Robin?
Cook?
Yes.
No, we haven't, but the food here has been really great. But actually on May 5th, all the scientists, it's our turn to actually do the cooking. So we're planning a really yummy Cinco de Mayo feast.
All right. If you could sum up your whole trip so far in 30 seconds, what would you say?
Overwhelming, cold. Education, I've learned a ton already in a short period of time, and ice, definitely. I know a lot more about ice than I probably ever will.
All right, we miss you. Be careful up there.
All right.
No, all right, and before we sign off here, are there any more questions from other people other than the museum? Or people that just want to say hi.
One more question.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Robin. This is CQ. Huh?
Hey.
Oh. So how was it? Did you have a good day?
So far, our big thing so far today has been this conference call, actually, because it's still early over here, so I've done some ice observations today, and we're planning probably, I think they're going to core again later on today, so I'm probably going to do that too with Emily, and we've been checking out for seals and birds, so it's going good.
Oh.
And just to remind you, it's a really long day here too, because not only is it only about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but the sun stays up until about 11:30 at night.
All right, Robin. I think that's a lot of our questions here at the museum. Also, we were wondering if you could sum up your experiment in about 30 seconds, too, just to give an overview for the kids, if you could kind of break it down for all the ages.
My experience?
Your experiment with the nitrogen levels and things like that.
Oh, like our experiments that we're doing here on the ship?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, we have nets that are collecting all the small organisms, and then we're seeing what kind there are, and in some cases counting them to determine how much plankton or like the plant stuff is out there for them to eat. Some others are looking at the gases that are in the soil, like the sediment down at the bottom, as well as the gases that are in the water. And basically, and then recording temperatures and salinity. And another big part is what Maggie and I are doing are the ice observations, because depending on the types of ice, it lets especially the mammal people know when we're getting closer into seal territory or walrus areas. So that's basically...
A really big part of the project is they're looking at how the Bering Sea ecosystem, all the living things in the Bering Sea change as the ice recedes, because we're up here in April, and April is the month where instead of continuing to extend, the ice starts to go back. If we wait another month and a half, there won't be any ice, or there'll be very little ice here in the Bering Sea. And there are lots and lots of changes going on right now that'll be evident when boats come up here in the summer. And that's when they see all the whales, and they see lots and lots of seals and all sorts of wildlife. But right now we're seeing the change from barren ice winterland to a thriving ecosystem with lots and lots of whales and other animals up here.
Wonderful. Thank you. Robin, we have another question from Sherry here in the planetarium. She wants to know if you've had any clear skies for stars and if you've had anything like that.
Have you seen any aurora?
At the very beginning we had some, but lately it's been a complete cloudy overcast, and it hasn't been good weather at all to see the stars or even that chance to see the northern lights. But again, I don't think anybody's seen it even on the night watch. So.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for you.
Okay. Is there any other questions from the audience?
This is Tanya Cushion, one of the teachers on St. Paul. I'm wondering if you can hear us.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, thanks. I'm sorry that we didn't join you right away at the beginning. We were on lunch break. We've been listening since about 1 o'clock, and I was wondering if you could tell my students that I have with me just exactly where you guys are, because if you're at the edge of the ice, so you must be north of us, and then what you suspect your plan is going to be until you get down to the St. George, St. Paul area.
Hi, Tanya. This is Maggie. And right now we are north of St. Matthew's Island, and we're about to stop going further north and do a parallel transect going east and west and measuring along that line. I don't really know when exactly we're going to be getting down to your area.
On
April 27th and April 28th, April 27th, we're going to be on St. George, and April 28th, we're going to be on St. Paul.
Okay, so I had read that. I was wondering if it was still the plan, so it sounds good there then.
And Tanya, there's also going to be some other scientists that will be arriving, like on St. Paul, so they'll be there before we are, because we're doing a swap out with some of the scientists.
Yeah, that's okay, right. Okay, and I think we've invited her, and she's going to give some talks at the school here. I don't know if you guys are having the same weather right now that we're having, but boy, is it ugly and windy outside here.
Yeah.
The only nice thing is that when we're up in the ice is so heavy that it damps out all the waves. So even though it's really, really windy, we're not having to deal with any waves.
Thank goodness.
We had ice down here until recently. Sometimes, like the last couple of days, we could not see it near the beaches.
Okay.
It's pretty thick where we are. It's about 4 feet thick in most places.
And we just went through an area that the satellite showed was an open area or a polynya, maybe on the 14th, and by the time we arrived on the 17th, it was covered with a fine layer, about 2 to 5 inches, of newly made ice. This is right to the southwest of St. Matthew Island. So it really suggests it's very cold and there's new ice being formed right outside of the ship.
Okay. Is there any more questions from the audience? Okay, if not, just a reminder that we're going to be doing another live event with the Healy on Thursday, April 26th at the same time. You call into the same number. Also, this event will be archived, and we'll send out instructions on how to access the archive. And I just want to thank the folks on the Healy for doing a great job and being able to pull this together in such a time, short timeline, and everyone for participating.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye,
Have
Robin.
A safe rest of the day,
Robin.
Bye, guys.
Hi, Robin.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.